Victoria. So far we've covered a lot of ground, but couldn't go back again to the early days. And thinking back to the time when you lived with your grandfather and uncles and aunts, was there anybody else that you'd like to tell us about that had a great influence on you, or members of your family that you feel were special and need to be mentioned?
Well, I think each one of them had a very strong personality. Mm-hmm. The women in particular in our family, and my husband always said I take right after him, are very strong individuals and really run the family. I'm not sure that my grandmother, however, was one of these strong individuals. I think the children sort of ran her. My mother ran my grandmother, and my grandfather was a very quiet man, but he probably had a great deal of influence in my life. All of us adored him. He was very quiet and stately. He very seldom raised his voice or yelled, but when he did, all of us would shake and quake, and including his sons. I mean, they didn't like to fill in every day, and he thought they did. And the minute if he happened to return from the synagogue and they were still in the house, where they would run, to get the tefillin. Unfortunately, he died while he was working at the Kaplan Baking Company. It was right before Pesach, and I was only 8 years old. And I came back from school, and I found Ralph Sugars there taking the coffin into the house. Now, that was the custom in those years, to bring the coffin into the house.
Into the living room.
They brought two tall lamps on either side. And then they had special people that sat there. It really is supposed to be a great honor to guard the body during the night.
Yeah.
You can imagine how eerie I felt about it. Mm. It was
how old were you?
Eight.
You were eight.
It was really quite frightening. Mm. And yet, this is what was taking place there. Whenever any relative came in, the children lived out of town, each one of them would just, I mean, they were so close to this mother and father, especially to their father. I mean, each one of them just threw themselves on the coffin. And of course, the coffin was closed, but I can recall, the whole family being there the whole week and on the porch. And I absolutely do not recall the funeral or going to the cemetery, and it's very possible that I did not go, because in those years they did not take children to funerals or to the cemetery, so I stayed home. I think that's a big mistake. I mean, it would have been much better. I have one aunt who's living from the whole family, and she's at the Whiteman Health Center now. Her name is Lee Radford. She was just married for a very brief time, and there was a pool between this aunt and my mother. She was much more modern and with it and younger, and in her youth, I'd say a swinger, dressed beautifully and went out on a great many dates. And there were times that I would wish that my mother would be more like her, but my mother was an entirely different type of a personality.
So was she a sister?
She was a sister. Mm-hmm. And she was the one that said, "Are you sure you know what you're doing when you get married?" And she ended up being married for 6 months and then got divorced and then
and
never married again.
Who supported the family after your grandfather died?
The family had a business on Fifth Avenue.
Radford Brothers. Yeah.
And
wholesale.
That was the Jewish wholesale area,
right.
Uptown. And all of the Jewish merchants, my uncle started out going on the road and carrying satchels and suitcases with the merchandise and working for other merchants who had already been established on the avenue. They used to call it the avenue.
Right.
And then they started their own business. I don't know the first address, but they were in the second place, and my son is still in that building. It's at 1025 Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold men's wholesale and to jobbers, men's shirts and pajamas and pants.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good business. I mean, there were ups and downs, certainly with the Depression and things that happened. Every time steel mills closed in the small towns, businesses got bad. It certainly affected the merchants. They all settled in that particular area. First of all, it was close to the Hill District where many of them lived originally. And also they had like an unwritten agreement that they kept open on Sundays. And the other stores in the cities all closed on Sunday, and they were closed on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
so that they could observe the Sabbath. There were many times when they had these blue laws and they would threaten to close the stores on Sunday. The bulk of their business was on Sunday. When Jewish families would come in, not just to buy merchandise for their stores in all the small towns, and that also included my aunt and uncle who came religiously every single Sunday for the day. They went to Fifth Avenue. There were butcher shops there. There was a grocery store, kosher butcher shops, a grocery store, and they would come in to buy their food supplies for the whole week and also to replenish the stock in their stores. The businesses ran in a different way. Today, you order direct from the manufacturer, the jobber, but they would come in and they didn't have to buy that much, and they would replenish their stock every single week. This whole neighborhood now has changed. There are just maybe two or three stores left. Now, the city or the government has helped refurbish some of these buildings, and it's close to the courthouse, and many lawyers have their offices there on Upper Fifth Avenue. There were many jobbers or customer peddlers also that came in to buy. On the Christmas vacations or just before the holidays, those stores were mixed bags. They were not strictly wholesale. They had, I would say, several different prices. Some of them had, not my uncle's, but some of them had three and four prices. Some you could not go into unless you were really going to deal with a wholesaler, but in most cases they were willing to sell to people off the street. And for weeks before the Christmas season, that was a good bit of their money was made before the Christmas season. Because these stores downtown, and there were no shopping centers, those stores were closed, and they felt they were getting a good buy, and they would all come to shop on Fifth Avenue. There were times that I even went down just to watch that no one stole anything. My mother would go down. I mean, we weren't that adept at selling the things, but we would get down to help out. In later years, I actually went down and would sell before the Christmas season or the New Year's season and help them out.
So that way,
anyhow, that family, this aunt that I mentioned, Lee Radmore, who lives at the White House, she was the bookkeeper there for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And the two older brothers, Julius, who had a great deal of influence on me, my Uncle Julius and my Uncle Harry, both were involved in the business. My younger uncle, Irvin Radbord, was not a partner at that time. He just worked for them. My Uncle Julius was like my surrogate father. He was the one that lived two doors away, and there was never a time that he didn't take his daughter or go someplace that we didn't go with him or that I wasn't included. Every Saturday we would go to Clareton to swim. He had the car. And he would take us swimming. I will say this, that my Bubby and Zadie never drove on Shabbos, never went swimming on Shabbos, but they never stopped us from going. I think my grandmother's tongue would hang out. She really wanted to go, but she didn't go. It was this uncle who actually made my wedding. He would pay for it. In those years, it was probably $500. He died shortly after I was married, and I was really quite upset over that.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that paid for my my tuition and my education and the membership at the Beth Shalom. I mean, these are the ways that I got through, and the family of the business would give so much money every week, you know, to buy food and everything at the house. They bought those houses, I guess it was right after the Depression, a very small amount of money. I don't think it was more than $6,500 each house. And in most cases, the people had lost the mortgage and had lost the house, so they bought it from the bank. All that, it was a step up. I mean, we were on a big terrace, and and the house is still in existence today. When my mother left the house, we had trouble selling it. I think we got $14,500 for the house, and that's 21 years ago, and you know what real estate is worth in Squirrel Hill today. Any empty lot is worth money, even if you tear the house down.
Gloria, may I also touch on something? You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but it's to do with your father, who obviously only was in your life for a very short time. Do you want to make any comments about him? Did you see him again? And what did you do?
All right.
If you want.
Certainly, it certainly doesn't bother me to speak about. I have no emotional tie to my father. He came from a very nice family. They certainly wanted to stay close to me. When I would go to Chicago, I guess because of my mother's relationship with my father, the scars that were there, I would go first to visit my aunt, and we would stay there for most of the time. And then I would always call. He had two aunts there and an uncle, and they were very cordial, very hostile. They had nothing, there was nothing against them, and certainly they had nothing against me, and I was still part of their family. Whenever I was there, they were exceptionally good to me. My mother tried many times to get a Jewish gift, and she could never find my father. They managed to keep his residence a secret. They never would tell her where he was. I know that he remarried, and he also had children from the second marriage. And my husband made contact with the daughter a number of years ago. I have not made contact with her again. And he came back from New York once. My father ended up living in New York, telling me that this half-sister of mine looked so much like me, except, and was built like me, except that she had a Brooklyn accent. So, of course, this piqued my interest, and I made arrangements to meet her, and he was absolutely right. And she was very cordial. And then again, she would not tell me exactly where he was. I will say that I had nothing against this man, you know, personally. And I wanted to invite him to the wedding, to my wedding, but my mother would not hear of it, nor would their family hear of it. They did not want him to come to stir things up. He never gave one penny of support. And I don't know what was wrong with the marriage. It's just that their chemistry was all off.
Was he a professional man?
No, he was not a professional man. He was a young man and a handsome man, and I think the youngest boy in the family. Perhaps he was spoiled. My mother used to, this is her side of the story. Mm-hmm. And I only have that side of the story. Used to say that he was spoiled. He didn't want to work, you know, and she was the one that was the workaholic and had this conservative background, probably a Puritan background. Mm-hmm. And he would just wander off, you know, when they had this little store, and then she said he took money out from the account. I'm not sure what the whole story was. All I know is that he just, the marriage was terminated. I don't think they chased him out. I don't think he ran away, whatever the story was. And I don't know that I'll ever know exactly what happened. But, you know, when you tell them these things, you know, oh my God, you know. As I say, I think I had to work harder at things, and the fact that I had this strong family all around with the cousins and everything, I think it certainly helped.
Okay, then to get back to your early school life, now we know a lot about your Jewish education, which was substantial. How about general school?
Well, I went to H.B. Davis School, which is now, it was torn down and it's a nursing home on Phillips Avenue near Melbourne. That school was built, I guess, during the Depression. It was a beautiful little school. They intended for it to have many stories. It ended up, I think, just being one story. And I was the first class in that lovely little building. We went to school there until the third grade, because they never did finish it, never added any more grades. And it went along like that for many, many years. And from there, I had a choice of either going to Whiteman School or to Colfax. And I ended up going to Colfax School. Mm-hmm. And I went to Colfax through the sixth grade. And then from there, I went to Alderdice. It started at the seventh grade. Okay. And I will say, we lived close to Alderdice. We had a 20-minute lunch period, but because we were concerned with finances and keeping kosher, I very, very seldom ate in the cafeteria. And it was a treat when I ate in the cafeteria. My cousin did the same thing. We ran home in 20 minutes, gulped our lunch, and ran back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And we survived.
What were your favorite subjects at school?
Well, probably in addition to the academic courses, I liked to cook and to sew.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up really having some very good grades and did some wonderful work. In fact, I thought I was going to go to Carnegie Mellon and take up designing, but my mother thought it was a terrible profession for a girl to be a tailor. You know, she always thought of an old tailor bent over, you know, with a needle and thread. And maybe I'd have been a designer or a dyer, I don't know what, today.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up going into a business administration at Pitt. I was there, I guess, a year, and then I met my husband. And all the GIs came back at the time. I had four young men were my locker partners, and I was already engaged.
So did you complete your business administration?
No, I didn't complete my business administration. I got married, and every time I told my husband I went to school after I was married, too, for a while. Every time I told him I'm going back to school, he said I was smart enough at the time, and we just didn't have the means or the money. He even started out to work for his PhD, and that too became stressful for us, because once we got married, we were fortunate to have our own apartment. We lived on a third floor in Wilkinsburg,
mm-hmm.
and I was amongst the first couples at Pitt that had their own apartment. We didn't live on a third floor in my parents' home. And we didn't have a car when we first got married. I went by streetcar in my classes at Pitt. And he paid for my tuition. I think it was $16 a credit. But he paid for the tuition out of his meager money that he was making at Westinghouse,
mm-hmm.
which was really a very small salary.
At the
beginning, I will say this, and I want to give credit. I had some aunts that thought I shouldn't go to school because, after all, I didn't have a father, I didn't have the money, and they thought I should just take a secretarial course and go out, you know, to work. But there were others that felt that I should. And, of course, my mother felt that I should. And I will give credit. The Rhoda Sholem, she tried to get me some extra money. The Rhoda Sholem had some sort of a scholarship fund. And she was a devotee of Rabbi Freehoff. She went every week to his book reviews and his lectures,
mm-hmm.
and Sunday morning. I mean, he was like an idol for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she managed to get a small amount of money from the Rhoda Sholem, which I'm indebted to. And certainly, I've even arranged that they should have some money once I'm not here, because
mm-hmm.
I felt that they helped me in going to Pitt.
So what about your early married life? And you spent a year at Pitt, and then you got married.
Right, right.
Tell us a little bit about your early married life.
Well, as I say, we lived on the third floor in an apartment. We shared a bathroom with another family, and they had a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Jewish family around the corner by the name of Mandel that had a tailor shop, and they were so delighted that we moved into the area. The way we got this apartment, and I think this is important too, the building was owned by a man whose name was Coleman, and he owned 60 apartments in different buildings. And my husband lived in this apartment with a non-Jewish man from Westinghouse. He was transferred. And so my husband asked if we could have that apartment once we got married. We got a lovely letter from this Mr. Coleman telling us that we were the first Jewish tenant in 60 tenants. And if we wanted to keep this high percentage, he gave us all these rules and regulations that we had to follow. It turned out that in this lovely building, first of all, they didn't collect the rubbish there as they do in the city. So anything they didn't want, they would throw over the back porch. And one piece of upholstered furniture, throw it over the back porch. 6 months after Christmas, the Christmas tree was still sitting. Every Saturday, they played switchies, I mean, in this lovely building here. I mean, where couples that lived there went up and down the back stairs, you know, and he was concerned that we were Jewish and moving into his property. 6 months after we moved out of there, somebody was shot. So that was his lovely building. This was the city of churches, but it was so difficult to get an apartment in those years that we were just thrilled to have a place. From there, we moved to Bartlett Street and just stayed there for about a year. We rented a place, 6531 was the address, part of a home that was converted for two families, and we lived on the first floor, and that's where our son was born. Julian is our oldest son.
When was he born?
He's 41 years old. He's born in December the 16th. I have to figure out the year. And he's married now. I don't know if you want me to.
Yes, we've
all right.
He's married.
All right.
Many children he has.
Right, certainly. All right. As I said, we stayed there and just for a year, and then we were having some difficulty with the landlady there. The furnace, that place was always cold, and he got sick, and we decided we're going to look for a house.
Mm-hmm.
We had thought of looking for a house even before, but some of my relatives, how a young couple like that, why would they buy a house? I mean, we'd have been better off if we'd have bought it immediately, because you could buy a house very inexpensively in those years. Anyhow, we came over to Severn Street, where we still live, and we never heard of this area, this street. It wasn't even on most of the maps. It's one block long. And I think we came at night. It was a house that's in those years it was called a row. Now it's called a townhouse. And
is that this place?
This place right
this
here.
Place.
This very place
that's
right
wonderful.
Here. That's why it's so cluttered with so many things. You have no idea what's in the basement and in the garage. Right. Anyhow.
When was your second son born?
Howard is 39.
Yeah.
And his name is Howard Burton. The other one is Julian Allen, whatever. They're named after, Julian is named after my Uncle Julius that I spoke about before, and also my other uncle. I will say that those two uncles died very young. I was just at the cemetery yesterday, and one was 38 and one was 42. Both of them died on vacation from heart attacks. So I named Julian after my Uncle Julius, who I thought was my favorite uncle at the time. And Howard is named after my husband's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Kai Bailey.
Are they both married?
Both sons are married. We continued belonging to the Beth Sholem. Both of them went through all the life cycle events at the Beth Sholem. They attended Linden School, which is a very fine school. People moved into this neighborhood in order to go to that school. We ended up loving the street and always were fortunate enough to have good neighbors on both sides, wonderful neighbors, which we considered our family, even though some of them have moved. We've replaced them with wonderful neighbors, or I don't think we would remain in this particular house. We have used the house to its fullest extent. My husband is also involved in the Jewish community. When I became involved in Pioneer Women, which is now Naamat, I was still in, somebody approached me to join. They started an evening group, and I was still at school, so I waited another 6 months, and my husband joined a B'nai B'rith Lodge, it was Freedom Lodge. They organized that lodge, and they organized Pioneer Women. I didn't know too much about Pioneer Women, except that it was a women's Zionist organization, but I didn't know the philosophy, the ideology. But the fact was that it was convenient, and my friends were there, and it was in the evening, and that's when he was going to his meetings and I was going to my meetings, and that's how the two groups got started.
Can we get the date that you joined Pioneer Women?
I joined Pioneer Women when I was just about ready to deliver my son, Julian. So it was the same year that the State of Israel was created.
48?
What year?
1948. Right, 1948.
Okay.
Just to,
yes, go back and ask.
Were you going to say something?
No.
No, just to, talk about your children very briefly.
Sure.
What paths do they follow? I mean, it seems to me you carried on the tradition that you were raised in. Is
right,
that correct?
Right,
you
right.
You stayed at the same synagogue, etc.
Right, right.
And do you feel you raised them more or less the way you were raised? Life went on in a similar...
Well, I think we tried our very best to do that. I mean, I had Shabbos dinner here every single week once it was too difficult for my mother to have it, and she would come here and mm-hmm. contribute her share, and they knew they were never to go anywhere Friday night or to make social plans because mm-hmm. that was the role we had on Friday night. We always had company here. We had the big Seders here where we moved furniture, but to this very day we have the Seders mm-hmm. in this house and two Seders, and even when I suggest that we go somewhere else, the kids want to come here. Certainly, they keep kosher, but they don't keep it the same way that we do in our
You keep kosher?
I keep kosher, yes.
So
in addition, I also keep, I change everything for Passover. We have seven cartons of dishes, pots and pans, everything in the garage. We remove everything from the cabinets. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a real chore, and I think that's one of the reasons we have not moved, because we know what it's like to pack. To pack and sure. to unpack, mm-hmm. and we're still in this house.
And briefly, just to catch up with your sons, what do they, are they professionals today?
Well, one son majored in business, it was also like business administration,
right.
and he ended up, spent a short time in the reserve. It was right during the Vietnamese War. Both of them had very low draft numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I have, some of my gray hair comes from that. And both of them swore they were never going to go to fight. And it turned out that Julian ended up in the reserve unit, but he ended up being, they let him out of the Army because he ended up with a terrible asthma attack, and they thought he was going to die. They didn't believe us that he had this condition. And he just came back and ended up, he started going into my uncle's store just to help him. And my uncle and he got along famously, and he ended up staying in that business. Just before my uncle's premature death, he was arranging to sell part of the shares, ease my son into the business. As it turns out, my son is still in that building, but the business has changed. The whole atmosphere on that avenue has changed. The customers aren't what they used to be. They don't come in off the street. They don't come in anymore from the small town. So it's the business. They sell to institutions, they sell, it has changed to jogging suits and sweats and things that young people buy today. Because how many white shirts do men buy and wear, or young people buy and wear? And he's in there with a partner. Father had a business down there too, and that was in wholesale dry goods. So originally they merged, half of the store was dry goods and half was the men's wear. They also bought the building from my aunts. Both of my aunts had owned, their wives had owned the building. So one sold her share a number of years ago, and then my son bought the share from another aunt. So he and this other partner own that building, and he's in the business, still in the business today. His wife is a teacher, and he's married to Janet Berger, who comes from the Pittsburgh family. They have a very similar background. She was raised on Bartlett Street. Her father happens to be a chemist like my husband. We knew them from before. He has a paint and chemical business, and my husband was involved with coatings and resins, and we went to trade shows with them. We were involved with them in B'nai B'rith, and accidentally, I don't know, I mentioned to somebody that the Berger girl was home from college one weekend. One of his boyfriends was looking for a date, so the boyfriend called, and I didn't even know that my son started dating her, and next thing I knew, they got engaged, and they got married, and as I said, she also went to the Beth Shalom, which is very unusual. Also, he went to the School of Advanced Jewish Studies, I think it was called the College of Advanced Jewish Studies in those years, with Dr. Kessler at the head, and she also graduated from that school. In 1967, we took both boys after the war, the Six-Day War. I'll have to even go back to my first trip to Israel, but we ended up taking both boys to Israel, and also a niece. My older son was already in college.
Before we get too far, right. I did want to put down, what was the name of this business?
Radford Brothers was the original name.
Oh, he still calls it
Now it's called J&B, Julian and Bernie J&B Sales. The business is called J&B Sales.
But it's still the same thing?
1025 Fifth Avenue.
And how many children does he have?
He has two girls,
okay,
Sarah and Rachel. Now the other son? The other
son,
his name is Howard, and he's married to Denise Lohr, who was converted to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And he met her, he's an attorney, and he worked for the Neighborhood Legal Services, and she's a social worker, a caseworker, and they were dealing with abused children and children at the Schumann Center, and that's where he met her. They would take children there and take them out and visit the mm-hmm. homes together. And we didn't know he was dating her either. When he graduated from law school, she was at the party here. We had like 85 people here outside, inside. And she was here, and we never even realized that this was the young woman he was eventually going to marry. When we did find out, we made a decision to invite her to the Seder. We didn't know, should we condone the marriage or not, you know. And we made a decision to invite her to the Seder. She was so moved by that invitation that she got together with some non-Jewish young women and